It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
And welcome to our always ostrich-free zone. That is Eco Talk, and we are trying to stay cool here. Yes, even though it is the dead of winter, it's been a little balmier than it should be in many parts of the country, with cherry blossoms, I understand, breaking out in some parts of the East Coast. And then we, of course, seeing a lot of intense snowstorms in Colorado, even more than usual. And we normally follow science rather than anecdotes. Certainly, weather and climate are not necessarily the same thing, but we are beginning to wonder. Well, talk about wondering. Directors Judith Helfand and Daniel Gold, like many of us here at EcoTalk, and I'm sure many of you, have wondered what's up with a denial over global warming too. They've just made what they call a toxic comedy. It's called Everything's Cool, about the length, sometimes comic, that people are going to deny that global warming is real and has likely arrived. That film debuts at Sundance next week. Then we'll be talking to Mark Chandler, a scientist at Columbia University, who will be appropriately commenting on the recent report out of England that says this year could go down as the warmest year ever recorded. So we think there's some connection between those two segments in our first half. Then we'll be chatting with Mia Hanick of the Natural World Museum. She's a very interesting person, started out as an artist, became an environmental advocate. We'll hear about how her two passions are merging. Then we'll talk about the huge problems that are arising in Russia with Gary Cook. He's been talking about some of the fun eco tours there, but also some of the very serious environmental issues that they're being faced with. Don't want to delay anymore. Want to welcome Judith Helfand and Daniel Gold to the program. And congratulations on your about-to-debut new film.
Thanks.
So what made you decide to make this this movie? I think it's perfect for right now, and you're the perfect team to take the view that needs to be taken on global warming, which is humor, but also I'm sure there's a serious underlying message. So, Judith, after Blue Vinyl, if I didn't mention that, you both were the directors of Blue Vinyl, one of environmentalists' favorite documentary. Why did you decide this? I think actually when that came out, you said you were already working on this one. So that was, what, a couple years ago?
Well, I don't think we were working on this when that came out, but we started thinking about this a couple of months. We started thinking about this in June, July of... Yeah, I guess you're right.
We started researching the film in the summer of 2002 while Blue Vinyl was on the film festival circuit.
That's right, and I saw you at that film festival in San Rafael in Marin County, and at that point the movie had been out for some time. And anyway, what made you decide that this is a topic that you must take on, the two of you?
Briefly, we were approached by a group of folks who wanted to make pictures of the future, and they thought perhaps we might be interested in collaborating with them about what the future would look like if global warming really came to full fruition. We started speaking to them about different things, and then we kind of went off in a different direction. And, you know, Judith's film, Healthy Baby Girl, was really about toxins, and then, you know, I collaborated with her on Blue Vinyl, and it was about environmental toxins, and we spent a lot of time talking about environmental issues, and this is kind of the mother of all environmental issues, so we decided to step up to the plate.
Hear, hear. And will we laugh so hard we'll cry, or cry so hard we'll laugh, or a little bit of both and more emotions that you're evoking?
Well, we hope so. I mean, you know, like we did in Blue Vinyl, we tried to sort of balance the humor and the horror, and I don't know, one could say what's funny about vinyl and what's so funny about climate change. I think that the focus that we wound up really taking was sort of looking at why, for a while it was so, I mean, at least for us, we started to look at why is it so hard to message? Why, if this message came out so strongly in 1988, in 2002 and 3, are we still, you know, laggards in the United States? And what is so difficult about this? And we, you know, we started initially, like so many others, we started looking at impacts and solutions, and slowly we started to really look at the story of messaging and who was struggling to tell the story and why was it so hard and how were they doing it. And, you know, it's always the process of struggling to tell a story always comes along, you know, with some humor and some pain and some struggling.
And you do that brilliantly. And I understand that you follow some of these messengers around. Ross Gilbspan, one of our regular guests, as well as Heidi Cullen of the Weather Channel. She's also been on the program. Those are two of, what, about a half dozen?
About a half dozen. One of our characters is kind of a two-headed character. It's the guys that have been named the bad boys of environmentalism by Bill McKibben, who's kind of considered the poet laureate of global warming. Mm-hmm. Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus, we kind of consider one character with two mouths because they're the bad boys.
The death of environmentalism.
All in all, it's about a half a dozen characters, yeah.
Oh, boy, they are interesting characters. I can't wait to see this film. I understand that you kind of take an approach, like you said, there's maybe some villains here. Who killed the electric car asked a question, how can this be? And this reminds me of the same kind of approach, like, you know, at the time that we were seeing record high gas prices and Hurricane Katrina, GM was rounding up and killing electric cars. What's wrong with this picture? Is that the kind of approach that you have here? And did you find any real villains here? And if so, can you tell us who they are? Or do we have to wait for the movie?
Well, unfortunately, I guess we sort of know how it ends, don't we?
Well, the movie or what we're going to do about climate change?
Right. I mean, in terms of sort of when the movie ends, we're just sort of at the precipice where we're all standing on right now. You know, sort of like, what are we going to do? There's not much time left to do something. And so, you know, one could point the finger, you know, is the villainous finger correctly pointed at the federal government that's really not taken the kind of action that they needed to?
Recalcitrant politicians,
you know,
certainly.
I was just going to say, in the same way that the solution to global warming is not going to be, you know, solar by itself or wind by itself or alternative fuels by itself, it's going to be a combination of many, many different things that's going to be the solution to global warming. In the same way, there's no one villain. You know, the problem of getting the message out about global warming and having people care about it can be spread, you know, across many different places. Certainly the interests of the oil companies like ExxonMobil funding front groups to do a coordinated sort of, you know, misinformation campaign is as close to a villain as you could point to. But, you know, there's human nature. That is featured in the film. But there's also, you know, human nature in itself is almost a villain in that none of us really want to deal with this. We don't really want to think about this. It's so big, and the solutions seem so larger than us and almost unreachable that, you know, one villain is just denial, and it's a very human condition. So we look at that a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think that's sort of that's a big subtext to the film, you know, and is certainly one of the things that, you know, sort of pushed us to take this on. It was just, you know, so how do you take something that is so easy to deny? I mean, maybe today when it's, you know, 58 degrees in New York City on January 5th, it starts to look a little less easy to deny. But, you know, that said, you know, part of our challenge here was sort of how do we take, you know, this future that is that seems incredibly ominous, that all the scientific evidence is pointing to, and there's a consensus on, and yet it's really hard to translate that into anything that people can really wrap their heads around, you know, sort of right now. And in the United States, we act on right now. Mm-hmm. So that's a sort of sub-character in the film.
And the movie is debuting in Sundance. Do you think you're going to have a tough audience with the cool Hollywood set, or do many people there already understand this?
A lot of the people that go to these, most people, that they're a self-selected audience, you know, they go because, you know, they love movies. They go because they're really interested in, you know, sort of the issues. Having had Blue Vinyl there and A Healthy Baby Girl, I think the audience is they want to hear what this film has to say, like they do with most of the films that are there. And I think it's going to be a pretty easy audience. But we're hoping to attract lots of people in Utah that are not necessarily your typical film festival goers. And
the red state of Utah.
Uh-huh.
Well, we were thrilled that you're using this medium. Obviously, look what The Inconvenient Truth did to raise awareness about global warming, and your film coming on the heels of that. Now what we need is, I guess, a film that's somehow entertaining and engaging about, okay, what the hell do we do about it?
So we have a little bit of what to do, but in the movie. I mean, that's sort of laced throughout.
Good.
You really can't talk about global warming without that.
Right, and we're still, of course, all figuring out what to do as we learn more about a challenge we've never, you know, had anything like before. As you said, the mother of all eco-challenges, and one that keeps expanding and certainly seems to be coming much more rapidly than anyone, even many scientists, could have predicted.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of hats off to Al Gore and the Inconvenient Truth, really the combination of the Inconvenient Truth and Katrina has really launched this into the national headlines in a way that really wasn't the case when we started back in 2002 researching this. You know, we started researching it and we found pretty quickly that the scientific evidence was very solid, very robust at that time, and yet there seemed to be a lot of confusion about global warming, and people didn't seem to really be able to hold it in their focus at all.
Like,
that just became a motivation for us to kind of find out, well, why did that happen? And here we are this many years later, and it really has come to the forefront thanks to not only the Inconvenient Truth and Katrina, but the science has become even more and more undeniable.
The perfect storm.
And Oprah.
And Oprah. I say we can thank Katrina, Rita, Wilma, Oprah, and Al. Good luck with the debut, and come back and tell us about it as the movie gets out there.
And Betsy, we are going to have a website up that's going to launch around the 18th, www.everythingiscool.org.
Terrific. We'll be back right after these messages.